You can do it. The time is now. Let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe.
In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents the authentically entertaining voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the always unforgettable, ever insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys. As we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live, always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Good for all and all for good. And now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Talk about changing the world and getting to it. Our guest today has a goal, and his goal is the shortest path to a fundamentally redesigned world system that makes possible and supports the highest quality of life for all of life, now and ongoingly. What a beautiful goal. Specifically, his focus is on the development of new systems of economics and governance that intrinsically incentivize life-enhancing behaviors at all levels of agency, supporting distributed and spontaneous problem-solving and conscious participation in our global evolution. That is quite a mouthful. And how possible is it? I think with a guest like ours at the helm, it seems to be quite possible. Our guest is Daniel Schmachtenberger, and he is the founder and research director of Critical Path Global, a think tank working on the development of new viable systems of global economics and governance. His passion is the application of complex systems science to social design to help coordinate all evolutionary endeavors as elements of an integrated critical path for humanity's collective evolution into the next phase of a truly sustainable, kind, and just human civilization. Yet another mouthful. And mouthful or not, is it possible? I would tend to think yes. And again, our guest, Daniel Schmachtenberger, will break that down for us, tell us what it means and how it's possible for all of us to get along and get behind this for a better world for all of us. We'll be talking to Daniel when we come back here on Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
This is Filippo, and today we are live from WizNew Labs in downtown Los Angeles. Actually, if you go to labs.wiznew.com, you'll be able to see, at least at the moment, pictures of us as we are in process right now having this interview together with our guest, Daniel Schmachtenberger. You know, it's interesting that growing up as a kid, at the tail end of what was called, for some, the hippie movement, I would be walking around certain areas of my town in Northern California, and I would see groups of quote unquote hippies, young adults or children, trying to create change or do things differently than they had been done up until that point. And I often say that sometimes the pendulum swings from one end to the other and then back again in order for it to find its balance before it comes to center or balance. And so being a child who I felt was misunderstood or not heard, looking at these groups of, in my opinion, they were adults, but they were probably children. And I remember asking the adults in my world, what's going on with them, or what's happening here, or what are they doing? And many derogatory comments would be said about them. And I remember thinking, why doesn't somebody ask them? Like, I wanted to ask them, what is it that you have a problem with? What is it that you are trying to do? What is it that you're trying to change? And maybe I agree with you. And I also, being kind of a bridge growing up between even adults sometimes, or the adults and the parents, I would try and find a way to get everybody to talk and understand each other. I often thought, well, I wonder if I knew what they wanted, and if I knew what the adults wanted, if the adults could help them get what they want, and if it would actually benefit the adults. And I kind of wanted a different answer from the adults, rather than to just dismiss them, to actually give them a voice and say, well, maybe there's something of that matters here. And at the same time, I thought, maybe if these adults had the wisdom or the money or the know-how of what some adults have, that there is a place here that could be better for all. It's interesting, probably not coincidental, that here we are many, many years later with a show like Life Changes with Filippo. And in a sense, life changes, bringing forth conversations that matter, at least are mattering to some of us that are maybe seeing the bridge between these two kinds of conversations, and being able to have them in an adult way is what is important to us. And I don't mean adult as in there's a way to have that. Maybe I should say mature, because not every adult is mature. So I'm sitting here across the sofa from a very young man who, when I've seen pictures of him on Facebook and seeing how he interacts, one can easily say that's, quote unquote, one of those hippies. And then in having conversations with him on the phone until I actually got to meet him in person, I thought, whoa, that's one of those adults, because of the way he's talking, as you also saw in the introduction, the big words and the words that are used in the business world or the economics world. And so what I think is here is a mix of the two. We're having a conversation that matters with our guest, Daniel Schmachtenberger, in a way that we like to have it. So Daniel, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Filippo. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And again, looking at you, you're so young and you're so smart. Let me just ask you this. How did you get to be so smart?
I was very fortunate to have a really unique kind of education growing up. My parents had a lot of ideas around educational theory that they wanted to experiment. So they homeschooled us in a really unique way. It was really about trying out alternative educational models. And so specifically, they believed in having no curriculum. So rather than the fixed amount of mathematics and social studies and English, it was just facilitate whatever the kids are passionate about, whatever they're fascinated in, and provide them with exposure to a lot of different things so that you really have a range of possibilities. And so I actually, in my whole education, never learned state capitals or certain aspects of American history, but I got to start studying systems theory and quantum mechanics when I was just a little kid.
And really?
Being engaged in activism. And,
Wow. Talk to me about, if you're studying one thing and the other, it seems like you didn't study it as in like it. This is this and that's that. Somehow the lines were blurred?
Well, because there wasn't curriculum, I didn't have a chemistry class and a biology class and a physics class. There was just the study of how the universe works, and the direction was based on my inquiry. Mm-hmm. And so the conversation would span from biology to chemistry to neuroscience to astronomy as questions. We're just seeing connections between things, which automatically lends itself to a kind of systems integration of the universe. And the arbitrary distinctions between biology and chemistry or chemistry and physics really are arbitrary and oftentimes get kids memorizing facts in a compartmentalized way without really understanding how all the parts fit together into whole systems.
Wow. So I'm taking that, for example, if our finger hurts, it's not just our finger, and if we're not really using it right now, if we were to just chop it off, and our whole body would hurt, and we may end up without the use of a finger, which is very important, or for that matter, any, you know, cutting out any one of our organs without knowing how it interacts with the rest of our body.
Well, exactly. System science is actually kind of a newer direction in science from reductionism that had just been about trying to understand wholes in terms of taking them into simpler parts, understanding the parts and putting it back together, but then you don't understand the relationships between the parts well. Mm. And so this ends up leading to a lot of fragmentation. And so as you look at how reductionism has affected our understanding of human health and physiology, we can look at a specific metric and we'll create a drug to change that metric without really necessarily factoring what caused that metric throughout the whole system, and does this drug externalize harm to the rest of it. So the Lipitor might actually bring cholesterol down but might actually cause a significant damage and side effect to the rest of the system, as opposed to understanding why cholesterol was up from a systems perspective.
Wow. And I'm extrapolating something that I don't know that I've ever thought of, because why cholesterol is up in the body, and then now if we're going to eliminate borders, why cholesterol is up as a society or in this world at the moment, and how emotionally that might be attached to an emotional consciousness or to what we're experiencing collectively.
Totally. Is diet used as a way to compensate for a life that doesn't really feel meaningful or engaging or has pain in it, so people get their dopamine hits from food, and food that particularly will give those dopamine hits, which healthier foods won't? Yeah, of course that happens. Is it used as a form of entertainment in lives that aren't adequately engaged? Of course it is. And that same kind of allopathic kind of parts-based mindset is applied in how we're trying to deal with our global issues. We look at the issues in education and the issues in healthcare and the issues in transportation and environment as if they're separate issues that we can solve independently without recognizing the way our globalized infrastructure works, that all of those problems are fundamentally interconnected and they're not solvable in isolation. They actually have to have complex system solutions that really look at changing the underlying structures that cause how all of those problems arise and are co-affecting each other.
We're going to talk about your think tank in a moment, Critical Path Global, of which you're the director of, research director and founder. Before we talk about that, I'm just curious, who's listening? Who's listening to this conversation? I mean, does anybody say, you know, he's got a point, or, you know, is the president of the United States calling you saying, you're right, kid, come here, let me have you run this?
Well, we have a situation right now where the answers that we have had for dealing with problems historically aren't working. And so we've got all of the governments of the world working on challenges. We have all the corporations working on the things that are in their mission. We've got 3 million nonprofits working on challenges they have, and yet ocean keeps getting more acid. Mm. We keep having species extinction. We're having collapse of keystone species. We've all of the major metrics that affect the integrity of the biosphere are getting worse despite all of the things that we're doing, which means that we don't just need more of what we've been doing. We need a fundamentally different approach. And when we really look at the timelines of irreversible harm to the biosphere and its ability to support our life, if we don't change really fundamental things quickly, we realize that we actually need a fundamental reassessment of what needs done and how to go about doing it right now.
So in other words, no, not necessarily are the leaders listening at the moment, but that's where the fundamental change has to happen?
So guess I didn't answer your question adequately. So when I started an assessment of global problems and the timelines associated and the metrics and the cause associated, and then what was already being done to try and address those, it was really clear that none of the current solutions were at all adequate. And so the question really arose for me, if our goal isn't limited to any part of the global problems, if we're not just focused on species extinction or feeding hungry people in the third world or making education better, but it's all of that, and really our goal is how to make possible a new world system that supports the highest quality of life for all life, how do we go about doing that as one integrated meta-endeavor factoring everything? And then we haven't really been very public. We've been in a deep R&D phase of analyzing what are all the global problems, how they interconnect, what are the metrics for being able to assess all that, what are the strategies to really develop unique things to offer, and we're just moving into kind of a public global launch phase, but we have had the chance to meet with a number of directors of industry and people in the nonprofit world and people in the public world, and what's been very interesting is that everybody that studies the data at all knows that the current solutions don't work, and they just don't know anything better, and they've all been really radically receptive to alternate strategies that are more viable.
Wow. Well, that's hopeful. I'm glad to hear that, actually, and I want to hear more. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what some of those fundamental system redesigns are that your think tank has come up with, and how eventually how we might be able to get involved in our own communities, or for that matter, in our own families. With that, we are talking to our guest, Daniel Schmachtenberger, Life Changes with Filippo. We'll be right back after this.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeidel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, talk about real life in real time, coming together to create change. This very moment is just that. We are live at WisNew Labs in downtown Los Angeles. You can check out labs.wisnew.com. WisNew is W-I-Z-N-U. It's a place that's like an incubator for all kinds of emerging and creative things that can change the world. And so this conversation is exactly that. And your think tank is exactly that from a social engineering and evolutionary philosophy aspect, Daniel. So our guest, Daniel Schmachtenberger, is just that, social engineer and evolutionary philosopher and strategist and founder of Critical Path Global, a research and design institute. And your aim is to create all kinds of change. You're talking about fundamental system redesign. You're talking about new global values. What is that? And what are we talking about?
Great. At the core, the essence of the change that has to occur is a movement from separate and competitive interest to symbiotic and interconnected interest. Mm. And so whether we're talking the level of a nation or a corporation or a person, we've got separate ownership at all of those levels, owning property, owning intellectual property, and seeing ourselves as consumers of nature, which is, nature's a finite resource. We're consumers of it. Whatever you consume resource-wise, I no longer have access to. Mm. And as a result of that, I see you as competition for the finite resource that we're all trying to consume to have advantage. And this breeds out empathy, breeds out cooperation, and breeds in ubiquitous competition and the basis to externalize harm. So this is a value system where everybody else and everything else is either a commodity for us or a threat to our access to commodities. Mm. And that is a very old and very maladaptive pathological value system that's been operating for a long time and is really at the basis of how we've built global economics and global governance. So, when we... Even the words natural resource, when we think about them, is a whale a natural resource? Well, if you're a whaling boat and off the coast of Japan and you kill a whale, it's $1 million of economic advantage conferred to you that you don't get for not killing it. Mm. As long as we have an economic system where you have $1 million of advantage for causing harm that you don't have for not causing harm, and you don't have other ways to get the same kind of advantage for fixing problems, then we're going to continue to hunt whales towards extinction, which is what we've been doing. Mm. And the Cousteau Institute and Species Extinction Institute came out with a report that took 6 years to generate last year that says we've fished 90% of the oceans out in terms of large fish species in the last 100 years.
Wow.
And to really get what that means, that living on a three-quarter water planet that took billions of years for the biodiversity to evolve, in 100 years of mechanized fishing, we've fished 90% of it out.
Wow.
And so that's the result of seeing nature as a commodity, right? So this extractionary and harm externalizing value system is really at the core of what has to shift.
Wow. How? Because you just said everything in the sense that's how the world runs, right? Money makes the world go around. So those people that are killing the whale need that $1 million in order to...
In our current economic system.
Right.
And let's speak to this for a minute. So when we look at the issue of climate change and we look at the issue of ocean acidification, and it's really important to state, it doesn't matter actually whether you agree with the science of climate change or not to recognize that we have to get off of fossil fuels, coal and oil. The science of climate change is really crystal clear, but even if you don't agree with it and you question whether we're in a global warming or a cooling phase or if the warming really comes from solar flares, the fact that our CO2 levels have passed 400 parts per million and they've always been 280 parts per million for the last 80,000 years, fluxing within 10% from human causes, is unquestionable. Everybody on all sides agrees with that. And it's all of that carbon dioxide that's going into the ocean as carbonic acid that's created 30% increase in ocean acidification. All of the phytoplankton that produces the oxygen that supports our atmosphere is in the ocean. 75% of all the photosynthesis happens there, and it lives within a very specific and finite pH range. Mm. Our life depends upon the environment that we're affecting by that. Now, why do we continue to burn coal when we have solar and wind and geothermal? Well, we say things like, solar isn't quite cost competitive yet. What that means is I can build a new coal plant today where I'll be able to produce energy for a couple cents per watt less than for a solar plant in many environments. But that's only because all of the cost of coal, the vast majority of it's being externalized to the environment in the form of carbon dioxide and mercury vapor and the environmental effects of mountaintop removal mining, where the solar isn't externalizing cost to future generations into the environment. And if we ask the question, what does it cost to clean up all the harm to the environment that the coal is producing? And if you factored that cost into producing the coal would be four orders of magnitude more expensive than solar. And in that cost equation, solar would proliferate globally within 1 year, and we'd be off of the extinctionary path we're currently on.
Right. Someone's making money off of the coal, and there isn't as much money to be made off of...
Because we're willing to externalize the cost to the environment, which means to other people, to other species, and to future generations. You'd actually make more money off the solar if you had to actually pay for all the cost of the coal, as opposed to let a lot of the cost be externalized to the commons, which basically means steal from the commons. So if we had a balance sheet for the commons, and a corporation or a nation or a person was allowed to interface with the commons but not allowed to negatively affect its metrics, which means you weren't allowed to leave less trees, you weren't allowed to leave more carbon dioxide, you weren't allowed to basically steal from what is all of our commonwealth, then you can produce coal energy. You just can't leave anything worse than you found it. And that means that all of the cost of not leaving it worse has to be factored. Now coal's going to be radically more expensive than solar, and you make more money doing solar. So it's a rigged game with the externalization of harm that incentivizes the things that are more destructive. The more harm you can externalize to the common, the better your profit margin.
I like that you shared at the beginning of the show how you were raised and the fact that you didn't have these boundaries in your mind between the sciences and therefore between social classes and even the states, for that matter. I mean, everything. It just sounded like you were born with few of these lines and distinctions. If, however, someone is born with the lines and the distinctions, and in those distinctions, including the distinctions of class and the distinction of perhaps it is my right to take and keep and at any cost, then would that mind ever change to include your ideas?
Well, that mindset is fundamentally a sick mindset. It's kind of an ubiquitous mental illness that's been conditioned in the whole population. And when we look back at earlier times when everyone believed the earth was flat and it was cool to throw Christians to the lions or burn women at the stake as witches, we can see that a population can really hold a pathologically insane worldview across a whole population. This is still true for us today, as we are destroying the biosphere upon which our life depends. This will be seen by future generations as an ubiquitous insanity of our time. When war is supported by a for-profit military-industrial complex that is the largest sector of global economics, which means the largest institutions in the world have their profit margin dependent upon war and threats of war for its continued existence, and not having war would collapse global economy, this means that we've structured things in a way that is fundamentally not well. And so what's the cost of continuing this way? Well, we can't continue this way because we've been living in a fundamentally unsustainable way where we've been extracting the savings account that has taken billions of years for this earth to develop, billions and, you know, and millions depending on which resource, and we're almost at the end of those savings accounts. The issues of peak nitrogen, the issues of peak phosphorus, the issues of peak oil, the declining rate of oxygen in the atmosphere, the fact that we fish 90% of the fish out of the oceans, the large fish species, the fact that we've cut down 80% of the world's old growth forests, means that we're almost at the very end of this way of doing it. So it's going to end no matter what. This current extractionary economic system is very near ending. And whether it does so by imminent collapse, or whether it does so by us recognizing the collapse is imminent and so we proactively change it, is up to us. And the second way is a lot better for all of us.
One of the things I like about this conversation is that you're not only young but brilliant, and potentially you can go out and make millions of dollars off of your brilliance by just doing what's already been done. And you're putting a stake in the ground saying that's not me and what my life is, and at least that's what I'm feeling.
Well, any way that we participate with the goods economy currently, because of the larger industries and economies we have to interface with, is probably extracting resource from the environment in harmful ways, externalizing harm along the production and distribution chain, and producing waste. And most service economies still touch goods economies, so it's very difficult to not be causing harm that is moving us towards a self-induced extinction within the current economic system. And this is not the fault of individuals within it. It's the fault of a system that when we developed it, you know, up until the Industrial Revolution, we had 500 million people. To really realize that for 200,000 years of our species, we got to 500 million people. And in the last, you know, couple hundred years, we've went from 500 million to 7 billion. And that those people were extracting resource from the earth with shovels as opposed to D9s.
Yeah.
And they were fighting wars with each other with bow and arrows or most guns, not with F-35s. We have commit harm against each other and against the planet for a long time. We just weren't that powerful and there weren't that many of us. And with as many of us as there are and with the level of our technology, the biosphere can't support the mindset we've been operating on since the beginning of empire building. And so we're at a place now where we actually have the technology to be able to mediate a radically higher quality of life for everybody, including a higher quality than the wealthiest people have access to today, in a way that doesn't externalize harm and cause problems. Or we have the very real possibility of making life not possible on this planet for us in a meaningful way anymore. And that's kind of the crossroads we're at.
Wow, what a shift. What a shift. When we come back, let's talk about that shift. This is obviously a shift in consciousness and a shift in the way we're doing things. And I think part of what your think tank, Critical Path Global, is doing is helping us with having that shift, and can help us with actual practical minor shifts we can make along the way, from being just the one person, what can I do kind of perspective. So we'll be right back with our guest, Daniel Schmachtenberger, here on Life Changes with Filippo.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back, and it already feels like a new world, and I think it has a lot, I know it has a lot to do with this critical conversation that we're having, and I believe it really starts here, but it doesn't end here. A conversation is just the beginning. taking the conversation to actual doing something is where we all want to see. So our guest, Daniel Schmuchtenberger, is starting the conversation from where he is at the Critical Path Global think tank. If you want to learn more about Daniel and about the think tank, go to facebook.com/C&PATH, C-P-A-T-H. Or if you're in Facebook, just type in C-PATH, P-A-T-H, and you'll find him. Or you can go to criticalpathglobal.org, criticalpathglobal.org. Daniel, what does the future look like that is different from what we're seeing today?
Well, we don't know how it's going to go, but we can. I can definitely share some things about the future as we're proposing it. The future of economics and the future of governance as we're proposing them look like. One of the first things to really address is the concept of ownership, as we've had it for a long time, has had a couple different concepts mixed together, and we want to pull them apart. You've got the concepts of possession and control, as well as stewardship and access. And stewardship of a resource and having access to the resource are fundamentally healthy things. Possession and control are where the problems come. And so we want to be able to separate those and have a new kind of relationship to ownership that doesn't have to do with possession and control, but more has to do with access. Right now, in current economics, in order to have access to something, you have to possess it, and that means that nobody else has access to it. And that means it takes radically more resource from the earth to provide less actual material advantage to people, because whatever resources you have for the majority of their life cycle aren't being used. And yet you still, because of possess and control, have them. And so that means that the drill you have and the weed whacker you have and all those things spend the majority of their life not being used. Yes. Everybody else on your block has the exact same ones. It actually just creates a messy garage. And nobody gets even access to the best of what could be technologically done in those ways because of designed in obsolescence and profit margins that focus on marketing and all of those kinds of things. You can imagine a society with things like a complex technologically integrated kind of library system where everyone has access to the very best of what technology can produce without needing to limit or control anyone else's access. And if you possess a resource where I no longer have access to it, then I feel like we're in competition. But if you have access to a resource that doesn't limit my access to it, then I don't want you not to have access to it. Mm. And in fact, if you having access to a resource allows you to be creative, and then the things that you create also go into the economy that I have access to, now we've created a situation where I'm fundamentally invested in everyone else's access to creative resources. Mm. This is a really core change. So when we talk about the change in economics that has to occur, we're not just talking about things like nationalizing the Fed or changing the reserve rate or reinstating the gold standard. We're talking about things radically deeper than that. We're talking about having a closed-loop materials economy that doesn't look at nature as a resource to extract from or a thing to put our waste into anymore. But in fact, we don't have the concept of waste. We have the concept of resource that gets recycled, just like in any ecosystem. And we don't have the concept of needing to keep extracting more stuff. We have a closed loop rather than a linear materials economy. That's a core shift that has to occur. We don't externalize costs. So whatever the full material cost of doing something is all factored into the process. And so the strategies that are best factoring everything are the strategies that we implement. And we fundamentally restructure the concept of ownership. And it's important to get that as long as we've got separate ownership, some people will be born into radically more than others, having nothing to do with merit. And then those who are born into more will have better education and better resources to be creative with, so they'll continue to be able to create more, and those who are born into less will have less to be creative with. So you'll get a continuous and unavoidable ever-widening of the gap, and then you'll always have social stratification and class systems. And as a result of that, you'll always have human rights issues and crime and war that come from that economic disparity. Until we change that concept of separate ownership, that's an inexorable problem. And yet, in an access situation where we have a true commonwealth, not controlled by anybody, but with the kind of peer-to-peer distributed governance technologies that are just coming about now that we really have the ability to do, like Wikipedia and like Linux, how they're governed in a not top-down kind of way, but in a distributed way, to be able to have a distributed governance of a economics where all the world's resources are recognized as the heritage of all of the world's people, and that all of the rest of the creatures in the biosphere have rights to access in life as well, then anyone's access doesn't limit anyone else's access, and you have a world where the highest quality of life that's technologically available to anyone is available to everyone. In that world, getting stuff is not conditioned in anybody as interesting, because when you have access to everything, there's no status system, there's no competitive or differential advantage, and so greed is never bred into people to begin with. Mm. Greed and selfishness are not intrinsic to humans, they're intrinsic to separate interests and competition and scarcity that ensues from that.
Wow. Bringing that whole conversation down to my day to day, I had a moment where I didn't want to use the dry cleaner anymore. I happen to know the dry cleaner by name and her family, and I used to like seeing her, and I would see her a lot, and we'd chat and all that. And then I stopped going for a while because I thought, I don't want to put those chemicals out into the air. I don't want to put them on my body, and I'll just use them for formal events that I have to have a press shirt for. Otherwise, I'll just do it myself with an old-fashioned iron. And save whatever. And so when I started seeing her, why aren't you coming anymore? And I realized in that moment, not only is she missing me, but I'm affecting her business. She's making less money because the person in the neighborhood has stopped going to her. So now she can't make money to feed her children. And then I started accumulating all my hangers and the plastic that it came with. And then I used to compile them and bring them to her. And the very first time I did that, there was this uncomfortable moment, or one of the times, because I said to her, you should start asking all of your people to do this, all your clients. And she got really uncomfortable and blushed, and everything stopped in the dry cleaner because the guy who sold the hangers was standing right next to her trying to sell her more hangers. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I realized I am trying to do good. Yet in this current system, I'm making bad for everybody by doing good, in a sense.
Well, we have a system that is built upon principles of competitive advantage and extraction,
right,
and externalization.
Your point.
Of harm.
Exactly.
Then yes, people are going to be economically disadvantaged by not doing the things that cause harm, because that's how the current economics works, which is why you have to create a new economics, because you can't have the integrity of the biosphere and our chance to survive as a species pit against us doing okay right now. And if you put those against each other, the future looks very bleak for all of us. And this is why what we don't need is just more of the same kinds of little actions and activism. That's important. What we do need is a fundamental redesign and restructuring of global economics, global governance, and the human value systems that those are built out of. And we need that now in a very real way, where, you know, most of the environmental scientists, if you talk to James Lovelock or Jim Hansen from, you know, the climatology department at NASA, or the projections that they have based on the best data regarding ocean acidification and keystone species collapse are really bleak. And they're not bleak for 100 years from now. They're bleak for 20 years from now.
Wow.
And we have the ability to change that, but only if we change global economics and what we incentivize. If we incentivized the right things, right meaning didn't externalize harm to anybody or anything and was systemically good for everybody, and we can make an economic system that does that, we could have renewable energy proliferate this year. But within the current economic system where you say, is it producing as much profit for shareholders as the thing that externalizes all of its cost to the environment, then the time scale for shifting, we've gone extinct by that. Or at least had catastrophic kinds of negative effects to the population that are things that we all want to avoid. So really what I'm proposing is a call for systemic restructuring, a recognition of the imminent kind of risk that we're in, and also recognition that economics is not biology, it's not physics, it's not a universal truth, it's a made-up system. Humans made it up.
and we can change it. And we made it up when we knew a whole lot less about the world than we know now, and there were a lot less of us, and we were less powerful, and it's time for a fundamental updating.
We had a guest on the show 2 or 3 weeks ago, Anthony Orlando, and we need to introduce you to him. Young economist coming up in the world, and he wrote a book called Letter to the 1%. And it's interesting because he comes from a privileged background for all intents and purposes. And he's saying he knows some of these people within the 1%, quote unquote. And that he said, what they don't know is that we could all be better off, including them, even better off than they are with these kinds of changes, similar to what you're saying, but from a different perspective. So here you are saying the same thing. So how do we affect that?
Yeah, just to take that example a little bit further. So we come back to the weed whacker or the drill that are in your garage, and we recognize that we're taking vastly more resource from the earth to make the weed whacker for everybody on the block who hardly uses it.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also then got so that's the competition on the ownership side, but then on the ownership of intellectual property to produce it side, you've got 10 different companies that in order to compete for market share are all trying to come up with something novel and then patent that, trademark it, so that nobody else can use it. So this drill has a better ergonomic handle, this one has better bits, this one has a better chuck, which means the best drill that technology could produce will not be produced in this world, cannot be produced in this world, because you can't synthesize intellectual property, which means even the richest people in the world don't have access to the best of what science could do within this economic system. And in a different economic system where you can synthesize all of the knowledge, all the intellectual property, and you don't have designed in obsolescence to push a service economy or to push a economy of, you know, buying new stuff, we could produce radically better stuff for everybody, which means that yes, everyone else would have a radically higher quality of life, but even the current top people would have access to radically higher quality of life than anybody has today. And so we're at this very unique junction where the opportunity on one side is all upside, but it takes massive work to change the momentum of the direction we're on.
Mm.
And the opportunity on the other side, if we continue as we've been, is all downside for everybody.
Mm.
And that's really the impetus of our time. And if you think about during World War II, when the United States decided to get into World War II, we got in because of because we recognized imminent risk to us. We were concerned about the Germans getting the bomb and about coming over here and doing what they were doing in Europe. And so because of that recognition of imminent risk, we really decided to get in and have this huge development of military. And so everybody was bringing the copper pots from their kitchen to be smelted down into armory, that kind of thing. Everyone was pitching in a really core way that affected their day-to-day quality of life because they really felt that they had to. We need that kind of recognition of imminent harm, but the bad guy here now isn't the Germans, and it's not us leaving the British, you know, in the Declaration of Independence. The bad guy is our historical and collective ignorance of the fact that we're all interconnected on the itty-bitty biosphere. And any place that we externalize harm to, we live there. And that it's not possible to advantage ourselves at the expense of others. Our ignorance of our interconnectedness, codified in the global power structures, economics, and governance structures, is the only bad guy. And it conditions all the people within the system to participate with it.
Right.
And it's really our job as a whole species, transnationally, to recognize our need for a fundamental shift from identifying in separate ways to put us at competition with each other, that externalize harm to each other, but we're really interconnected and experiencing that harm, to a profound recognition of our global interconnectedness, interinvestedness in all life, a redesign of economics and governance in line with that, and then a repurposing of science and technology in ways that only cause life support and advantage without harm externalized.
Daniel, I commend you for not only what you're saying, but how you're saying it. I trust that this will be heard, understood, and acted upon. CriticalPathGlobal.org or Facebook.com/C, Path, PATH. Daniel Schmachtenberger, thank you so much for being with us today on Life Changes with Filippo.
Thank you, Filippo. It's a joy to be here.
And a pleasure. When we come back, we're going to have our producer's wrap with our producer, Mark Lejeune. go to criticalpathglobal.org or facebook.com/cpath. Be part of this. It's important. We'll be right back.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
We are back, and we are changed.
Indeed.
This is going to be quite a producer's wrap. I can't wait to hear your brilliant mind on the subject.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think we need a lot more time than we have to even begin to touch on what we've heard.
We needed a lot more time with him.
Exactly. You know, so many people talk about change or wanting change, and then they ask, you know, how do we do it? You look at the system the way it is, and it's a daunting task, because most of us focus in on a certain discussion. There's a problem, we talk about that problem, and we come up with solutions. If we do this, we do that, and most don't view it from the place that Daniel and Critical Path do, which is stepping back at the big picture, looking at the universe and the way the dominoes fall, and the interrelatedness, the interconnectedness of things. You know, it reminded me of the two words that one of our good friends, Michael Pattinson, turned me on to in phrase, which is creative collaboration.
Mm.
And that really is what it is all about. We're shifting from me to a we-driven society. Mm. and have to.
And we all benefit.
Indeed. That's the only way it works. You know, everything else is finite. And to know that people like Daniel are out there and Critical Path are out there, you know, taking a look at these things, but that there are solutions coming down the pipe. I think that's the exciting part. That's what Life Changes is obviously here for and been a big champion of, because it's so easy to kind of poke at, you know, what's wrong or what needs to change, but to actually step into the doing and looking at a positive solution, as you were saying. In fact, I was thinking about it during the break, mentioning Anthony Orlando, our past guest, which you did. And you know, so there's more and more that are starting to open up this perspective of it's not us versus them, it's we, you know, collectively.
You know, interestingly enough, maybe I was that quote-unquote hippie that I mentioned, you know, 2 years old, I was that hippie, and I was saying that there's something here that we need to look at. Because growing up, even though I became a quote-unquote professional and worked in the corporate world and all that, I remember thinking things differently than the way I was than the structure I was in. So for example, when I worked for a large corporation and they were telling me to sell to my customers all kinds of things that they didn't need, which made no sense to me, and I got reprimanded for not doing that when I had a perfect opportunity to do that. But they don't need that, and that's not good for them. Oh yes, but it's good for us and it makes you money. Yeah, but I don't feel right about making money that way. There was a conflict there. And then I made enough money to buy a nice big home in an area with a lot of other homes, but I bought the biggest home I could, so I didn't have money for a lawnmower or for a gardener or for certain things. So I would go around borrowing from my neighbors, thinking every single house here has one of these. Why do I have to buy one now too? And the neighbors would be kind of like, you don't belong here. If you can't afford to buy one of these, stop bugging me. And I thought, you know, I don't get to know you unless I knock on your door. This is kind of interesting because now there's a relating going on.
Right. The way that we had been brought up and the way things were set up in this fragmented, bifurcated, compartmentalized society really exposes the redundancy when you look at it from not in terms of an established community, but say you're in a rebuild after a disaster. And then you start looking at those behaviors. And because once you're in and you're buying there, you're being marketed to, and then it's about status because you're already there and my car's got to be nicer than their car, whatever the case may be. But when you go in, you know, say after, you know, one of the hurricanes and you start looking at rebuilding a neighborhood and then the redundancy, the misuse of resources, manpower, time, et cetera, becomes so blatantly obvious. Yes. Not to mention the point that Daniel brought up, which was fresh to me, of the idea of the synergies of technologies. So really, we haven't even begun to tap into the potentials of where we really go because of the competitive nature of the build.
This is brilliant. It's bringing together so many things in my mind. 3 days ago, I had a 3.5-hour life coaching with a life coach. I was coaching him, and he said to me that he was on the way to a major crash, and he said he thought it was just going to happen. It was just inevitable. And I said, well, you could do that, and that's one way to learn. Or knowing that that's going to happen, we can change behavior now and make it different. And so, like you say, should the inevitable, quote unquote, happen, then we're all going to learn, and it might even be too late, but we're all going to learn. But can we learn before that inevitable happens?
Yeah, and we have to. And I think people are starting to wake up to this fact. You know, you can't sit around and wait for a near death experience to wake up, or to wait for a hurricane to look around your surroundings. The systems have changed, and we're reaching finality on certain living systems, and yet there is abundance. So when you look at that redundancy and this misuse of resources, there's plenty for everybody to go around if you step back the way we've designed things.
Ironically, the abundance that the most people are seeking, I think, is to be happy, have fun, live healthy, and it seems like so much of what is in the way of that is the construct that we have built ourselves.
Yeah. Well, when you sit and watch the tube all day long and it's telling you you need this or you need that, right? And you're distracted from what it is you really need. That, I think, therein lies the confusion. So maybe turn off the TV and go for a walk and go to the park and have fun.
Yeah, or watch shows that matter.
Or watch shows that matter.
Like this one. Like Life Changes, exactly. Yes. This is really exciting to me to be able to have this conversation, and also to be a part of these organizations and all of that. There's a momentum here that's growing, and I thank you, and I thank Dorothy Donahue, and I thank Michael Wisnu here at Wisnu.com, WIZNU.com, right?
That's right. Wisnu Labs.
In order to be able to effectuate the changes that we're looking for. So we're here. My hat off to our guest, Daniel Schmuchtenberger, and what he's doing out at Critical Path Global. And to all of us, the exciting thing when I was talking 20 years ago about my lawnmower or the lack of lawnmower thereof, people said I was crazy. And the exciting thing is that there are more quote-unquote crazy people out there, and I'm very happy to be part of that craziness. That's very exciting. So with that, we are Life Changes, and together we are making a difference, and I want to remind you all that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, Life Changes. Change the world. Now's the time. Now's the time.